for the strong and the bold, who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years. This one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond, our premiers, 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017, is officially Tiger Time.
We never wait until the last
time.
A celebration of all good things Richmond right now.
Come from nowhere.
Alex Rance.
He's never not going to go, was he? Was he?
Pick up from Cotchin. Left foot snap. The goal of the game.
Trent Zimmer and Brendan Gale deserve all the credit. They've built something fantastic and we just got to keep riding away.
Martin, 3 votes.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And it's a week later. We're back-to-back premiers, 3 premierships in 4 years. We're the number 143rd ranked sports podcast in Australia. How are you feeling, Andy?
Yes, I am a number 134, so why try harder? It's pretty special. I managed to sneak in for on-tap beer at the London, because you can do that now in the functional state of Victoria. Mm. And functioning. There was a whole lot of people in the London wearing Richmond gear sitting around. Do you know that Paul Rudd meme about look at us?
Yeah.
Look at us. Felt a lot like that. Look at us, Nick. Look at us.
Talk to me about my football club.
Yeah, absolutely. And tell me about your football club. It's been. I mean, the news hasn't stopped. I've an interesting, really grateful. A couple of Richmond people have done it, and I'm not entirely sure of its legality, so I certainly won't mention any of them. But enjoyed radio calls and also radio calls dubbed over the TV footage. It's really interesting to see that sort of. That because the radio call, we forget that was how the majority of people actually experienced the majority of their football through most of VFL football's history's life. So it's really good to enjoy that, to enjoy consuming football in a different way, and a game that frankly I can't get enough of, no matter how many times I watch it.
No, I especially enjoy listening to the 5AA call of the Crows grand final. The K-Rock call, although they're surprisingly professional, those guys, not particularly parochial, but I just enjoy it. And because I'm a bad person, I like listening to other teams' fan podcasts about our victories as well, but sadly, I finally found a Geelong one, but they haven't got around to doing their grand final aftermath show yet, disappointingly.
This was something we always debated about, Nick, and you know, just to pat ourselves on the back in our long history. And I don't think we've had 10,000 downloads last month, and I suspect that has a lot to do. I'm sure that has all to do with our special guests in nothing to do with the fact that just people can't get enough Richmond right now.
I certainly can't. So I've watched the replay several times already. I really enjoyed this game. Choosing a favourite grand final is like choosing between children, but yeah, it's pretty special.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the first one meant the most to me, 17. But this one, this one is definitively the best game.
The second was the most enjoyable by how comprehensive it was.
Yes. I mean, they all have their individual charms. And, of course, the first one was... It was a little bit of a comeback as well. But, you know, this one for the drama from start to finish, and you felt like we were beating, like, Adelaide we were too, but we just felt like we were beating a really good team on top of their game. And we also had all these disadvantages, the two players being injured. And just while we're on, there's been some great media this week, lots of great articles from traditional journalists. But, you know, two I just wanted to point out, which is, you know, I know we mentioned that he's a friend of the podcast, but Conrad Marshall's feature about Bashir Hawley, and, you know, you could have written a whole piece about the fact that he played out in that grand final with the shot calf.
Yeah,
and Dimmer saying to me, I need you, mate. I need Allah on my side. At quarter time break, and then when you watch him for the rest of the game, like, he's chasing hard, and Geelong don't know that he's shot. It's incredible performance. No, but that's only a small part of just an amazing.
He doesn't look that slow.
No, he doesn't. It's incredible. I don't know how he did it. I'm like, he's in some. Once you notice he's in some foot races, and he does really well. But that, and you know, there's a wonderful story in the articles, and it's in this weekend's Good Weekend, or you can read it online, about him going up to the Collingwood cheer squad after one of the cheer, you know, some drunken morons called him a jihadist, and after the game, he goes up to the Collingwood cheer squad. And he just tells them, no, you know, he sort of corrects their misperceptions of Islam, and the Collingwood cheer squad really embrace him. And, you know, Collingwood and the AFL are encouraging Bashir to report the incident, but he doesn't, because that's not what he's about. He's not this sort of, he wants to educate rather than to punish. And he gave this person his word. And it's just like, it was just... I'm only picking two stories. There's lots more, but I love that article. And it just, the Bashir having this heroic moment in the grand final is, I mean, he's got probably another year of good footy left, but inshallah. But
well, calf injury is willing as well. He's had a few of them now.
We'll have an Oleg versus him debate later. What an incredible performance and what an incredible article.
Yeah. No, look, there's been quite a few. I think the Age has really outdone itself the past week, because, frankly, other bits of the football media have transitioned rather too rapidly into trade talk, because that's where the clicks lie, and, you know, people are sick of talking about how great Richmond are. But it's a bit annoying that debating the potential destination of these players, the vast majority of whom will never impact a premiership, rather than talking about the actual premiers, seems a misguided way of doing things.
It is very reassuring, isn't it? Sorry to get off topic of the grand final, but when you see these teams play these huge amounts of money for flankers and wings and pockets, and like, they're all important players and we love ours, but, you know, there's positional scarcity, right? You break the bank for guys who win Norm Smiths and guys who are key position players who kick winning goals. Like, there was a great piece by Walid Ali in The Age as well, really the best nugget from it, the two sort of key points, was how we've had multiple different game styles as a team. But my favourite bit of the story was, it said that we had held a record for the most centre clearances victory, the highest differential of in the centre clearances of any team ever in the final series,
a good start.
It is a good stat. Partly, remember, because we played four games. Wally didn't mention that. He said it was because tactically it became more important. That's true. Probably also had something to do with the fact that our personnel got better in the centre square versus it being a weakness versus earlier in the year. But still, it's an incredible performance, because that same midfield was never dominant in the centre square when it was sort of playing well in 2019 and 18. So, you know, it sort of fascinating to see in hindsight what happened and how well this team played. I mean, yeah, it's just an incredible achievement.
I know. I feel like the Shane Edwards centre square god is a relatively recent phenomenon for a guy who was drafted 14 years ago, incredibly enough.
Well, you know, it's just he might win the most improved player again.
Oh, look, maybe let's just jump around and talk about stuff that occurred to us from the game. But of all the moments of magic in the game, I bet one of your favourites was the tap out from the centre square tap from Bolter to Martin in the last quarter.
Yes, the thing I'd subjected to you about 15 times on the podcast about how good Bolter is in the centre square. Actually, Bolter turned out very well in the votes per game in the Jack Dyer Medal, which we'll talk about in just a sec as well.
High in the votes per game, high in our hearts.
Yeah, and maybe we'll talk a bit in this pod or not later about sort of our thoughts about how you manage the list management from here. But he's clearly, you know, to go back to the Rance comparison, you know, Rance had other skills as an athlete, but Rance couldn't play in the ruck. He didn't have a leap that high. He had other skills. His sort of great ability was his cat-like recovery. But the sort of, there's a case, Noah Bolter's in a sort of, in a pantheon with Richo as an athlete, as a sort of one of the best Richmond athletes of the last living memory.
Oh, absolutely. Look, it's just it's a good problem to have, you know, and I think having too many good players is just a problem that normally sorts itself out. Like teams. You know, the stat that's been bandied around a lot about premierships, a premiership team has never played another game together as the full 22. Like, yeah, just injuries and form and age and, yeah, it's just, yeah.
We're giving it a red-hot crack, though.
We are giving it a red-hot crack. I was impressed. The sheer maturity of our key forwards, who I didn't realise had the same birthday, but that they had pretty frustrating days and that, you know, you never saw that frustration. You know, there was a bit of remonstrating now and then, as there usually is with Jack, but there was just a sheer relentless work rate, and I don't think it was any coincidence. You know, they both had last quarter goals and, yeah, just they stuck with it and played team-orientated football all day. And I think that's a real sign of maturity from the both of them.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, like, one thing that's very clear is how supremely well-coached this team is. And part of it is that the forward line is so functional in that, you know, it's got some players, you know, you can probably guess who I'm talking about, but there are some players who've had multiple premiership medals who wouldn't be World Cup first 22 starts for a lot of players in the AFL, a lot of teams in the AFL, because they wouldn't fit the system. But, we've got guys and we put them in roles, some of our small forwards and our wings, we put them in a role where they're given a lane in which they can succeed, and they do so extremely well. And because everyone knows their lane, it works incredibly, incredibly well as a collective. Just rewatching, who kicked our first game, two goals of the game? It was Dion on around the corner snap, which was quite a nice snap in fairness. And Caps, like, what odds could you have got that of them kicking the first two goals of the grand final? And it's just, it is a complete and supreme team effort.
I know, which it needed to be. Like, it is such a, it's a, this and the Port Adelaide game we're at another level, I think, for sustained physical pressure. Particularly the first half from the Cats, and yeah, we were on the canvas a bit in the second quarter. I know sort of
absolutely
teams have periods where they control the game more than others, but yeah, we were on the back foot.
I'm coming around a little bit to your idea that the first goal was maybe the best. Was your contention, wasn't it?
From Dusty, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I wasn't talking about the Prestia two goals. It was the only other multi-goal kicker, right?
Yeah.
It is...
Oh, no. Jack and Lynch both got two, didn't they?
No, Jack. Oh. Jack did because he kicked a late one, and Lynch only kicked one.
You're right.
But my apologies. But in the context of the game, back against the wall, we'd start to play better footy then, yes. But like, it was such a hard shot, and the way how he sometimes the ball was just floating in the air, and he angled his foot to hit it just perfectly sweetly to go through. God, it was incredible. And like, all those goals were amazing. The second goal was an incredible shot. None of them were easy.
No, not at all. I was this sounds incredibly smug, but you know, I think we're there already. I love getting the cherry on top goal at the end of a grand final when the game's won, and sort of
we got two of them.
Yeah, we got two of them. It's the only flat spot really of the 2017 replays. The last five to 7 minutes are pretty flat and dull, and we don't score any more goals. But last year we got the Cochin goal, and this year the Jack goal and the Jack celebration was great. And just when you thought that couldn't be topped, you know, Dusty just a subliminal goal. Defies description almost.
Have you seen the Ando design of the goat running away from Patrick Dangerfield with the cup?
Oh, yes, indeed. Speaking of Patrick Dangerfield, watching the game for the third or fourth time isn't particularly kind to Patrick Dangerfield at times.
You thought the 11 possessions wasn't sufficiently damning?
He just seemed to be having a lot of trouble with his boots. Like, he just kept slipping over and flailing his arms in the air a lot.
Yeah, I really do enjoy those. Like, to all those people who send Twitter stage of field staging, keep up the good work. I really enjoy that. I really enjoy that content.
Look, I mean, it's fair to say that there are some Richmond players, Jack and Dylan Grimes included, who have been known to milk free kicks. But I think it is a credit to Dusty that I don't recall him ever staging for a free kick. I think, I don't know, maybe perhaps it just doesn't even occur to him. But yeah, good times.
But he doesn't really need to. serious show.
The concept that someone has tackled him successfully is incredible.
Well, it's just like, I mean, like, it can't be a coincidence that he plays this well in big games. Like surely he's got an extra gear which he doesn't pull out in round eight. It's just when he wants to, he'll win.
He rises to the occasion, I think the way to put it. And we talk about that now during the season, but yeah, when the quality goes up. It is, and he's incredibly accurate when shooting for goal as well. Yeah, it's amazing. But we did that. Credit to the Cats, like they put a lot of pressure on us. Particularly the first and second quarter, and they.
Oh, no doubt.
And they were certainly hanging around in the third quarter as well. Like the tide had turned, but you know, the end of the third quarter, they had a period of dominance as well, and yeah, and then they never quite went away. We never quite killed them off until towards the end of the last quarter. But yeah, it was an intensely competitive game.
Yeah, it was. And like all those Geelong finals have been, like sort of in hindsight, because we kicked away from them late, it feels like we smashed them. But no, we didn't.
Certainly wasn't as relaxed and comforting at the time as it is watching it on replay.
Incredible game. We're so lucky to not only have a follow a winning team, but a team that's so much fun to watch. And, you know, the sort of hunting teams down because you've got greater stamina or your game plan, you can sustain your game plan for longer. It's pretty fun to watch, right?
Oh, and, well, and particularly once Nank starts grinding his opponent into the ground, that's pretty fantastic too.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. Such a... it's really interesting. I mean, at the start of the year, it was quite likely Nank was going elsewhere.
Yeah, we talked about it.
and suddenly it's both him and Broad were quite likely gone with 10 weeks left in the season, and now it's all over. I'm not even sure Nank had Soldo not done his knee. Like, Nank wouldn't have had the chance, because Nank does his best. Nank's like a running back who needs 25 carries in a game, or a boxer who needs to get into the late rounds. Like, he's not going to wow you playing cameo roles. He's got to play the full game to show you his full Nank. His full value is revealed because of the fact he can take a bigger load, he can counterpunch in the last, and allows you to do that the other spot where you'd normally play the second ruck. Like, we were saved in this game because our second ruck was our spare tall back. Gave us an extra back when we were in the strife. Now, it was a bit of a messy matchup because we had Asprey on Ablett for a while, but like, that's still a lot better than having Soldo on Ablett.
Mm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And look, it is like I think when we go back to hopefully normal length games and back on the MCG, I do think you have to have a more substantial backup ruck plan than filling in with one of your key backs. But yeah, Nank was certainly capable of carrying the load this time. Nathan Broad only played one out of the last five regular season games before coming back into the team. Like, yeah, as you were saying, he was far from. Yeah, he probably was seriously thinking about another club, and he comes back in, and yeah, his game holds up well on the replay as well. Again. We often had Grimes on Rowan and Broad on Dangerfield. And, you know, the only time Dangerfield really wins a forward 50 contest is when he's won out against Cochin, who doesn't spend much time in defensive 50 marking contests.
And obviously I'm one-eyed, but I thought that was a fairly dubious free kick as well.
Oh, look, it was it was about equivalent to the one that Jack got at the start of the third quarter.
That is extremely true. But that, and the one that Jack got was was pretty important in the game.
Speaking of the second quarter, when it turns, it turns fairly hard our way. And we do get. We get the game on back on our terms, and sort of, you know, with top teams in modern footy, you don't get the ball zinging from backline to backline. Like, it's often a far more dour affair with the ball stuck at one end of the ground. But yeah, Dusty's goal was crucial to, you know, some reward for effort, but yeah, I thought we were playing better, definitely.
Yeah, and that's the players have all said that since. And yeah, look, it took a quarter and a half, and we're just lucky that, because you can have bad luck in these games, and you suddenly you're three goals further in the.
We lost one of our best players in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, and then but then you know they could get a few more lucky goals, and you know it's even they go into they can play more credible ball control. It's anyway, it worked out perfectly. But
coulda, shoulda, woulda. Yeah.
And look, there's no sympathy for them because twice in a row this has happened to them. Yeah, you know, like they can say Ablett got injured, but Ablett was actually set up their two best scoring chains in the second and third quarters.
And was that on the ground for a substantial portion of the game? Like we were one rotation down, and it is incredible. I think as with the Cats game last year, that where we were a couple of players down, that capacity to run over the top of them in the last quarter anyway. It's a tribute to fitness.
I mean, obviously he's a great coach because they keep being competitive, but as a Cats fan, I'd be ropeable because they've had the two best opportunities you'll ever get. Think about it. They would have gone back to back if they'd beaten us both times.
Mm. Yeah.
And they just both times that they got early injuries of the other team and they couldn't capitalise. It'd be infuriating if you're a Geelong fan and sort of had an appreciation of what rotations other team being down in rotations did to you. Nick, can we transition to the best and fairest now?
Well, I wanted to finish just on that point. There was an article on the Raw website about how, you know, because we are at the grasping at straws stage of coming up with football narratives, but they had what I thought was a good point about how Richmond hasn't really had a rival through this period, and actually, because I looked at it and we've played 12 games. 12 finals in this period, and we played the Cats three times, Brisbane twice, the Giants twice, but yeah, that doesn't really. Notably, we haven't played the Eagles at all, and yeah, it doesn't feel like the Hawthorn and Geelong era or. Essendon, Hawthorn.
So the difference is it should be Geelong because
it should be Geelong, yeah.
But they've never beaten us, so
they don't get credit for it.
No, like the team that gives us the most trouble is Collingwood, I think, and we've only been good in the same year once. So yeah, and
in the game that we don't talk about,
exactly. So like that's. You know, Collingwood's capitulation late in the season was partly injury driven, but yeah, they haven't been competitive enough to really give us trouble. So yeah, I think it's just been circumstance that the one team we've played the most is a team we seem to have the wood over.
Yeah, and the teams had achieved so much that, you know, a trip to Perth is. About the only challenge left, and then you think, well, I've got to finish above us on the ladder for that to happen. So
yeah, and look, I mean, like the Port when we went to Port and won, that slayed that demon.
That's true.
You know, they were the top team in the ladder. They were the best team all year, and we went on their home deck and we ran over the top of them. But yeah. I just we've conquered that demon. They can't. This one of the many things this year did was put to bed the Richmond's a flat track warrior.
yeah. It couldn't have been more on the road. So yeah, the Jack Dyer medal. Which for you know. It was a facsimile of the normal event. Normally, you know, I know a lot of people who enjoy going to it, but you know, I thought they did a pretty good job anyway.
Yeah, it's a shame for people, but good on for the club for putting on something that people really enjoyed.
Look, normally there is no suspense about the best goal kicker award, but as it turned out, I hadn't really paid attention to it, and I was actually genuinely surprised that Jack won.
Yeah, Jack turns out has had quite a competent season, although not according to the coaches, which we'll discuss in a second.
True. But yeah, the Lynch's 3 weeks with the hamstring was enough for Jack to squeak over the line. I did think the best first-year player was somewhat in that category, given that Thompson Dow was the only player who qualified. God bless him. Look, he hasn't won this award before, but it's hard to imagine a more appropriate Francis Burke Award winner than Kane Lambert.
Absolutely. Who was the rock again this year?
Yeah, and yeah, spoke really well about it, the role on his team. But yeah, in talking about, you know, why the players voted for him, they said about how, you know, he and a couple of the other guys like would take some of the younger guys out fishing if they were struggling with not getting senior football. Like, yeah, it was, you know, sort of off field and on, he's a real credit to the club.
Yeah. It's another nice acknowledgement of what is a wonderful football story.
Mm. As always, I thought Piggy did a good job of sort of balancing sort of, you know, jubilation over winning another premiership with the, you know, the very real and very somber message of having, you know, this being the last season for quite a few employees in both the football and non-football side of the club. You know, that, as you'd expect, she did a very good job.
Sorry, as she always does, and she's been a real her leadership is just so refreshing. It's just her quiet competence and level of disengage, appropriate separation from the club. Not going up to the hub. You know, why do they need me around? Is the subtext of a message. And it's true. Well, clubs don't need their presidents around when they're playing football games. They need them in the boardroom making smart decisions.
Yeah, and providing leadership for the club as a whole. You know, not feuding with the senior coach.
Absolutely. So, I feel like we're beating around the bush, Nick, for the thing that you're super excited to announce.
I am super. Well, it's one of the traditions of the show is the Richmond Tiger Talk votes per game award. But yeah, it's hard to.
It's pretty special.
It's pretty special. It's hard to describe the pride that we have in presenting the 2020 award to an extremely deserving recipient. Andrew, the envelope.
Nick, my hands are shaking.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on. Who's going to read it out?
Oh, I assumed you're opening the envelope.
Oh, right. Sorry. Hang on. I'll just this elite podcasting here. Hang on. I'll just open the envelope. And the winner of the 2020 Richmond Tiger Talk Award for most Jack Dyer medal votes per game is North Tasmania's finest, Toby Nankervis. Yay!
It's a great day. I mean, Jaden Short missed out by 0.03 votes per game, but I think I think Toby came from the outside lane, and his finals series, he's polled a lot of votes, I reckon.
Yep, absolutely. Those last two games definitely got him over the line on the average. Jaden Short's a really interesting one, like, you know, the actual JD medal winner. Mate of ours was telling me an anecdote that a well-informed footy person who might be in the industry was giving him a long lecture that Jaden Short isn't in the top 10 best Richmond players before the start of the final season. That's like, there's a fantastic graph of if you look on the AFL rating site of Jaden Short's game and where he kicks the ball. And it's, I think someone Wallace sent it to me, but it's publicly available. And it's just, he's almost metronomic in the sort of two launch spots where he's kicked about sort of six or seven kicks, 60 to 70 meters down the line. Two similar ones in the back pocket and another one sort of on the halfback flank. And in modern football, where, I mean, how many switches did we have in that game? Probably, I can barely remember any, but like, it's all a territory battle. Long kicks down the line to advantageous position. What Shorty does is absolutely crucial to the club. Like tactically, he's so important. Like, the idea he's not in the top 10 is just rubbish. Like, he's incredibly important to the setup. I mean, easy to say after he's won the Jack Dyer medal, but yeah, it was a nice recognition of what he is to the club.
Come, a deservedly... was he second or third in the Norm Smith? But, yeah, you know, he was very high among mortal players.
Yeah, only he had 750 metres gained, roughly. Like, metres gained is one of the most important stats for Richmond.
Mm. Nank was very much the highlight of the votes per game table. Although, Bolter even shows up even better, finishes sixth on votes per game, as he missed a couple of games at the start of the season. But yeah.
Yeah, the other really interesting one is Caps is right up there. Caps came fifth off a very high sample, and he's sort of wing stable mate Pickett came 23rd, and completely different votes per game profile. So, you know, that's an amazing comeback from Camden after missing most of 2019.
Yeah, exactly. And I think his quite successful bout of goal kicking towards the end of the game certainly helped with that. The people's heroes, Oleg Markov, polled quite decently from his six games as well.
So yeah, 14. He'd be considerably better than Hawley. And yeah, Broad didn't even make the list. So yes, he was ahead of Broad too. He was ahead of Tom Lynch of all people, which goes to show Jack Dyer votes aren't everything. They're somewhat. I'm actually surprised how low Tom Lynch polled. I thought he would have won more votes for creating all those contests.
Yeah. And he probably gets marked against a curb. He had a
yeah. I think when you've got a contract season. I think when you've got a contract worth more than $7 million, you do get marked differently.
That's true. And look, with what you were saying about putting the money in the right place, like the two gigantic long term contracts, we have a Lynch and Martin, and you know, there's only. Jack Graham is the only player who's got a contract for season 2023. So actually, I kind of think it's exactly the way it should be.
A few other things point out that Cochran was still in the top 10, which this is votes per game we're talking about, which made me happy because sometimes I worry a bit about his drop-off. I'm less happy that Rioling and George were both 19 and 20, sort of right down the list of the regular players, which sort of intuitively it felt like during the season, but like you're sort of, you're always quietly wondering, are they doing so much amazing chasing that we're not seeing on our TV screens?
George never gets dropped under any circumstances.
That's true. Yes. Well, Jake Art's actually polled considerably better than both of them, which also goes to show Jack Dive votes aren't everything.
Yeah, Dylan Grimes, 12th, was a little bit of a surprise as well.
Yeah. Anyway, always interesting to get an unfiltered view of the of what the coaching staff think. And I think that's a good transition into contract talk, don't you think, Nick?
It is. Well, why don't we've just been talking about them. So, yeah, they had news that all of Broad, Pickett and Arts signed 2-year contract extensions. And, you know, I think, as we said, Broad, good reward for a very good final series. Also that while there was some interest out there, there wasn't a Brandon Ellis style offer, which I think might have cooled his market a bit.
Yeah.
Very happy for Pickett to get 2 years and getting more money and contract certainty for him and his family, which is great. Arts, I was mildly surprised by a 2-year deal.
I think both of them, like, I'm very happy for a personal level for both of them because they both had, for completely different reasons, really hard past the AFL. So,
all three of them, I think the youngest of them debuted at age 24, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, yeah. I apologize. You're right. They're all non-conventional. I think it's fair to say Arts and probably Pickett did it harder for very different reasons. But you make a very good point. But I'm happy for them on a personal basis. If it was a computer game, and I'm going to use this phrase again, so computer game sports management seems you don't have to deal with people's human beings or worry about what their personal life is like. You sort of think, well, you know, Pickett didn't exactly kill it this year. He's not young. Maybe 1 year would make sense in some universes, but look, I mean, who's going to be churlish about that? And the Arts thing too, maybe, but you know, good on both. Like, life is not a computer game, so
no.
It's not the right time to be churlish about these things.
Also, I think it's, I'd be interested if, because players on the rookie list only count half of their wage towards the salary cap, I'd be interested in if any of them, either of them, are staying on the rookie list, as we've done with Mabia Chol, where we get a bit of cheap, we give the player an extra bit of stability to save some money on the cap.
I did wonder with both of them whether the 2-year deal was the return for a slightly more modest salary. Which is a good reminder, actually, that you brought up Chol, because we were having a debate offline, and I'd forgotten that he had another year in his contract. I think I wanted to delist him last year, and he's regressed slightly this year, but he's not going anywhere with that extra year.
No, he's not. And also the sheer lack of key forward depth on the club, which we'll talk about in the lead up to when we talk about the national draft. But
yeah. Well, as I discussed with you offline, we don't need to discuss Chol now, but I sort of wonder what's the, like, we try that in the Port game, and, you know, sometimes you're better off just, like, playing Caddy as a key or George as a key. But, look, we could, the more interesting talk, I think, is about Oleg.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about him?
Look, I've said before that it is under these weird circumstances, it has at least been of great comfort that Richmond's been good, and I've my appetite for watching Richmond replays seems limitless. But yeah, every time I watch a game and I see Oleg, it makes me feel good. I'll Look, I'll be glad to see him get. Apparently, he's got a 2-year contract offer from the Suns. You know, the Suns have said that they're confident in being able to work out a deal. Like, I don't. Possibly for a future draft pick, which I'm pretty happy with, because next year's draft is meant to be very good, and this year's draft is a bit of a debacle, given half of the players normally come from Victoria, where they've got virtually no exposed form. So, yeah, I'm pretty sad about it. I'm also pretty sad about the prospect of Jack Higgins leaving as well.
Well, first, I want to talk about both of them separately, but just like the sort of the Oleg. So, again, if life was a computer game and emotions didn't matter and your greater emotional contribution is, like, you'd think about you'd rather have Oleg than Hooley in some senses, because Oleg still has upside and more years to play, where Hooley's, as you say, like, right near the end. But, like, just take that argument slightly. Oleg did average 11 possessions a game this year. That's not a lot. And he's not a lockdown player either. And, you know, we'll miss his attacking run, and I quite like his meters gain was very respectable. He had almost the same meters gains as Hooley did per game with seven less disposals. So, you know, there's something to his long kicking and his line breaking, but, and I'm definitely sad he's going, but,
what we were saying about Broad struggling to be in the team, like, Oleg's good form was keeping him out of the team, so.
Yeah, and that's the thing is you can't keep Broad and Hooley and Oleg. You've got to make a choice, and we've made ours.
Yeah,
it's hard. It's hard to get rid of 3-time premiership players.
No, well, and fair enough as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I don't think it. You know, a lot of the great Hawthorn players have ended up finishing their careers at other clubs, and I'm not. Not certain how I feel about that.
No, it's a difficult one. The Jack Higgins one. It's easy to say this after he's put himself up for trade, but even before then, I think, you know, Nick, I can see why people love him, and I quite like him as well. Mm. I can see the rationale. I have a theory that may be complete crap, but I wonder whether he's on the wrong team.
I wonder that as well.
Like the small forwards on Richmond, they're either, like, to be the creative small forward, you've got to be Shai Bolton or Shane Edwards, off the charts creative, or you've got to be an incredible athlete who can run down, who can do long, sustain long repeat chases at high speed. Jack, he's sort of a clever player that finds the places in between on a football field, but it's not. Richmond doesn't need that sort of skill so much. We don't play that way. And so I wonder whether he hasn't progressed from his first year. Look, his stats are about the same once you adjust for the less game time over the 3 years, and obviously he's had a lot go wrong in that time.
Oh, absolutely.
But I just, there's no upside tick there, which again might be just related to his injury. But I can see the case why he might want to go elsewhere. And he says he wants to play in the guts and kick goals, but, you know, he's averaged 1 clearance a game. What is he on Richmond? I presume he's a career small forward. I don't think he's ever going to be a centre clearance player, despite showing some talent at that at juniors. I mean, what do you think?
Oh, look, I'd always thought of him in sort of the natural successor in the Shane Edwards role, but look, he wasn't in our best 26, so I think him going to another club makes a ton of sense. And it's sort of difficult to work out what the best fit is, like, draft pick wise. But look, I'm sure they'll get it done. Like Richmond, have been good about getting their fringe players to clubs with good contracts. You know, the Den. I think it's going on double figures of players who've moved to other clubs, and really, the Dan Butler's the only one that only really hurts, which isn't a bad strike rate. But yeah, I hope we get fair value in the trade.
True. I mean, if Brando had stayed, he'd have another premiership medal.
That's true.
But we won it without him, so it's, yeah.
Shoulder shrug emoji.
Yeah, like, I mean, Butler hurts because his season this year was better than any of our small forwards, manifestly. But yeah, I agree. I'm more worried about Oleg than I am about Higgins. Mm. Does that sound crazy?
I hadn't thought of that. Oh, look, I hope they have good careers. I really hope neither of them become stars.
There is a chance Higgins might not leave. I don't know how big the market will be.
Apparently, St Kilda and Carlton have genuine interest.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. All right. Well, yeah. In that case, I agree and wish him the best. And like there is a chance. I often thought there was a universe where Jack Higgins would win our best and fairest on our team when we bottom out after all our premiership stars retire. But you know, yep. That universe doesn't exist anymore, I don't think.
Happily not. The other news of the week was for some really sad news. And actually, I was watching the presentation. The medal presentation, and you can see Fraser Turner relatively towards the front of the group, and now he and Luke English have been delisted without ever playing a game for the club, and it always makes me sad.
Yeah, I couldn't. It's a sad time, and he worked on his guns really well. In Brisbane, so it's hard because you just think it's so unlikely that they're going to get picked up by another club when everyone's contracting.
With the list sizes, look,
because it was always that was always the consolation is that you sort of like anyway, you know what I mean. It's just it makes me sad. Like it cheered me up when Corey Ellis went to another team. And it probably won't happen for Fraser, but best of luck in other levels of footy, and doesn't mean his career's over.
No, you look a guy like Menengola. Is it his third club? Plenty of the Richmond team spent a lot of time at state level, so yeah, there's an opportunity for them. The expectation is list sizes are going down by two, which is probably Turner and English. Alex Rance's contract comes, I think, has just come off the books. And we've got the other players who are out of contract, Iglamosi Smith, Garthwaite, and Miller. So I think probably at least. Funnily, of all those three, funnily enough, I think Ben Miller's got the most chance of staying. But I think possibly two of the three will stay.
Yeah. It's a difficult one. Like, what happens if Nant gets injured next year?
Well, exactly.
Yeah, it's a tricky. Like, I'd actually quite like us to draft a developmental ruck, but
Well, how would we have game? Like, we've just signed a 7-footer.
Yeah, that's right, and makes it hard. Well, I guess he is the developmental ruck, but he won't be here till the year after, will he?
He's playing. He's playing next year, but he won't have preseason.
Oh, okay. Well, that's, you know, that's something. You know, if you get to mid-season, because basically what you need is injury to CCJ and an injury to Nank, where you'd start to think about playing him. So that's, yeah, that's better than nothing.
No, one aspect of losing the Brisbane game was there's only four games left on Stack and CCJ's suspension for next year too.
Oh yeah, good point. And Nick, we've gone this far. We haven't mentioned that the VFL is back, baby, which I'm very happy about.
Really, really happy about that. A weird 22 team competition, and
yep.
You know, finally we get to play against our traditional rivals like Southport and Aspley. It's going to be weird.
Like, the only time I've ever heard of that is as a seat in the Queensland state election. But yeah,
I've had a meal at the Southport Club, which is no doubt subsidised by the thousands of poker machines.
Nick, if you go, if you play computer games online, there's the human players, which are really hard and shoot, but then the bots, which are the computer controlled ones, which are just basically walking zombies that are very easy to shoot. The VFL next year, because the VFL teams won't have, you know, that they'll probably be paying their top-up players very little money. It will sort of be these AFL-listed players and then these guys who are, you know, the equivalent, computer equivalent of bots. Because they're not going to be the A-team who's getting games in the VFL next year. No. And I think Stevie Morris will be in the SANFL or somewhere like that.
Yeah. So for our VFLW team, they've given up their license for next season, but they've formed an affiliation with Port Melbourne, so that the two seasons will run concurrently. I'm okay with that. I like an old school VFL ground, and
it's quite a nice ground.
Yeah, and I like. You know, you've seen arrangements where teams have affiliations with more than one club, and yeah, it's just a bit of a mess. It's disappointing we don't have a VFLW team, but this is a good compromise, I think.
I wish we were playing our AFLW games at the Port Oval. It's definitely, there is, Princess Park is just not a good venue.
No. Look, it's not official news, but Dimmer's out of contract at the end of 2021, I think, and so there's talk of a extremely well deserved extension for him, and he's also having a break till February. Which again, extremely well deserved.
Yeah, and good on him for having a break. It's like he's been a long, hard couple of years. By the way, the last time he had a break was, I think, before the 2017 season, where he allowed his assistants to rewrite the game plan. And that's no longer the pivotal moment in Richmond, because we've tacked multiple times since, but... having the courage to delegate has always been, I think, one of Dimmer's great strengths.
Yeah, and we've certainly lost some very good coaches, but we've still, still got guys like Adam Kingsley on board. So yeah, I think we'll be fine. And plus,
we've still got Barmy, who apparently is the mastermind of everything.
Well, and such a mature group as well.
I love that Tom Lynch wasn't told to go back in the Port final. He just went.
And you'd think for the senior, you know, I think it's very much a two-tier approach. I think for the for the senior core. You're sort of nursing them through pre-season with a view to, you know, what do they need to do to have a base to get them through another long season. And yeah, how do you give the young players the opportunities that they need and possibly have missed out on in such a weird year? So
Yeah, and it does give me hope how much excitement Dimma gets from talking about the young players, which is not that, you know, every coach should, but and I'm not saying that we have the best set in the AFL. I'd certainly like a couple more good young midfielders, but the fact that your senior coach is so excited about it is at the very least, when you have a very good senior coach, it's happy that he's still enjoying his job.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. So we'll be back. I think we'll wrap up the trade period and do a draft preview all in one, unless there's been some more dramatic news. But yeah,
any particular anything that you want in trade period?
2021 draft picks would be just fine. Also, if there's talk of several clubs who've got academy players wanting to trade down, and look, if we can trade up to get one of the better ranked key forwards, I'd be into that as well. But you know, I'm so smug and happy and complacent, it's hard to care all that much.
Yeah, it's sort of hard to think about. Like, I completely agree with your meta narrative about smug and complacency. On the other hand, we're so good at late picks, you know, with first round picks, we're okay. But certainly, especially over the last decade, not nearly as good. Outside Vossi and you know, Rioli's okay, but you know, when it comes to second and third and fourth round and the rookie list, that's our time to shine. So it's hard to get that excited about high picks these days.
Oh, we are so spoiled. Yeah.
I know that's a completely unsustainable way, but I just think that sometimes maybe we should draft the guy in the first round we planned to draft in the second. I mean, we drafted two people ahead of Noah Bolter.
Yeah. Yeah. Bolton at 29. God, I was having a look at the list of players drafted ahead of him, and it's who of that group would I want to trade him for? And it was a really, really short list.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It's a cracking pick. And it wasn't like, you know, he was a brilliant junior. He was just skinny and
outside.
Yeah, but you sort of think, yeah, anyway, we could talk about this for hours.
Well, we've spoken about it for 1 hour, but I think if there's ever a time for when our audience's desire for Richmond content is limitless. I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
For the strong and the bold who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years, this one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond, our premiers. 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017, is officially Tiger Time.
We never wait until the last
time.
A celebration of all good things Richmond right now.
Duncan Daly, Alex Rance.
He's never not going to go, was he? Was he?
Pick up from Cotchin, left off snap.
Risking head and skin.
Martin, three votes.